Up on podcast 1162, as Rivian get set to deliver their first vehicles, we now find out what the next ones are going to be called. Also on the podcast today, we are talking about putting batteries in classic Citroens, how Tesla got around the semiconductor shortage, and how a vehicle-to-grid incentive is on offer for fleets with Nissan now. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you're listening around the world. Welcome to EV News Daily. It's Saturday, 31st of July. Happy weekend. My name is Martin Lee. I go through every EV story so you don't have to, and we'll kick off with this news about Rivian. Now, we know the R1T and the R1S, the R1T for truck and the R1S for SUV, are going to be the first vehicles that they release. It was going to be last year, then June, now September. Let's hope no more delays and they get to customers' hands very soon. But now, according to the RivianOwnersForum.com, we have an idea about what the next ones are going to be called. They've just registered six new model names under trademark law. They are the R3S, the R4S, the R5S, so you would say all SUVs, and the R3T, the R4T, the R5T. You'd have to say they're all trucks. For the first two Rivian models, of course, S SUV, T for truck. Now, what we don't know yet, though, is whether these are going to be models for maybe a different territory, like maybe some of those naming ones are going to be for the Chinese market, or maybe they are different models on a global market. And what we've seen before is car makers using numbers sequentially. So Polestar 1, Polestar 2, Polestar 3 is coming. Whereas with, like, maybe say Hyundai, for instance, they're just launching their new range of EVs. The Ioniq 5 is going to sit in the middle of their range. There'll be a 6 and a 7, which will be bigger, and there'll be, I presume, 1, 2, 3, and 4, which will be smaller cars. So difficult to know. Maybe Rivian here are just going with the numbering route, the sequential route, but because you would think that, you know, Rivian have got space to go bigger with some of their vehicles, but definitely smaller as well. So look, we can't wait to see. The cars should arrive in Europe, for my European listeners, I think mid-July, on sale next year, or at least they maybe delivery start mid-July, so about a year away from European deliveries, and hopefully a couple of months away from US deliveries, because they look like fantastic beasts of vehicles. Next, talking about a beast, how about a huge Hyundai Ioniq 7 to complete the trio, the 5, the 6, and the 7. Now, we did get to see the 7 in a bit of a cryptic teaser shot that Hyundai put out with all three cars lined up, and all looking kind of, well, looking very different in segment, but all having those square pixel headlights that the Ioniq is pretty famous for, I would say, very distinctive. And the magazine Auto Express have commissioned some images, some renders about what they think it could look like. Well, it looks like a big Volvo, to be honest with you. This looks like an XC90 to me. The Hyundai Ioniq 7, which they have taken a stab in and said, look, you know, looking at the silhouette in the picture that Hyundai put out, we think it could look like this. We've seen the teaser image, and now our artists have said, look, this is what we think it could look like. Yeah, think big Volvo. And that's no bad thing, by the way, because I think their styling is absolutely on point. So, yep, Hyundai Ioniq 5 should be in the UK. Wasn't it? It should be this week. I'm going to ask a friend who's ordered one and see where his is. I know the right-hand drive European models have, you know, long been delivered to customers. And so, yeah, anyway, back to the Hyundai Ioniq 7. Same platform as they're using for all their other cars, the eGIMP, EGMP, 800-volt architecture, 350 kilowatts. Fast chargers will supply about 240 kilowatts of peak power at the moment. Of course, you can add 100 kilometers of range, 62 miles in 5 minutes, and do a 20% or an 80% in 20 minutes, rather, maybe even less, 18 minutes. I don't think this would be any different. Maybe as it's going to be a big SUV, this vehicle's too big for most people. It'll sell enormously well in China and the US. Is going to be probably certainly bigger than the Ioniq 5. So there is room for maybe even a 100 kilowatt hour battery pack. Who knows? But one thing we do know is it's going to have those parametric pixel LEDs in the headlights along the front. And again, that's no bad thing. You would think all-wheel drive for something like this, wouldn't you? Right, next, Tesla. A little mop-up of the story earlier this week about how well they did in their Q2 deliveries and finances as well. And other car makers have really been hit quite hard with the semiconductor shortage, as the chip makers have been favouring the consumer goods that you would get in, like your games consoles and things like that. Tesla said they held many calls with their suppliers to resolve shortages and find even new chips. So when that has to be done, Tesla have a team of software engineers to then rewrite the software, the firmware that needs to make the semiconductors work. And they go in everything from airbags and seatbelts, and not just the batteries, although they do, of course, play an integral part in batteries, energy management, all those kind of things, BMSs, and that's why I think it wasn't said, was it, out loud, but they said, oh, you know, we have to prioritise cars because we can't make the power walls. I think that was all linked with the semiconductors. So that's how they've been doing it, because somebody asked me, how comes Tesla don't seem to have been affected like so many of the other car makers? They almost seem immune to it. They're not. And in fact, they said the chip supply is fundamentally becoming a factor on our output. That was the quote from Elon Musk. He said, it's difficult for us to say how long it'll last because it's out of our control. And it was around that point in the earnings call that Elon did sound quite dejected, like this is something that really could scupper Tesla's plans, and they can do nothing about it. They just need to get the chips they need to put in the cars, and of course the stationary battery storage as well. Hey, next, here's a funny story. Well, you decide whether it's funny, but it made me chuckle. The independent newspaper here in the UK have a story about drivers who work on the underground loop system in Las Vegas, and if they are ferrying passengers about underneath Vegas, the Las Vegas Convention Center, and those customers happen to ask the drivers of the Tesla vehicles in these tunnels, which have been built underground, about the company or Elon, they have a script they have to follow. Firstly, they are told to keep conversation to a minimum. But if your passengers do ask a question, if they ask how long you've been with the company, the drivers have to say, long enough to know these tunnels pretty well. That's in order to avoid making passengers uncomfortable. If it's your first day on the job and you don't quite know how to work the vehicle, don't be scared about crashing. Hey, talking of crashes, they don't call them that. They call them accidents. And the drivers are told not to engage in a conversation if they're ever asked about accidents in the tunnels. There is a whole section on Elon Musk. If the Tesla drivers are asked about Elon Musk, the script tells them to only ever give a positive answer. They should say things like, he's awesome, and use words like inspiring, motivating. If the driver is asked if they enjoy working for Elon Musk, they should reply, yep, he's a great leader. He motivates us to do great work. Mr. Musk is to be described as very involved and supportive. And the script continues that if anybody questions his Twitter activity, they should say, Elon's a public figure. We're just here to provide an awesome transportation experience. Beep, boop, boop, boop. I am a robot. I do what I'm told to say. Oh, my goodness. Is this Las Vegas or North Korea? Hey, look, I'm sure lots of companies have guidance on. I know that in the past, for companies that I've worked for, I have whole sections of the contract about not bringing companies into disrepute, about not saying anything on social media, even on personal accounts that could get, you know, reflect negatively on a company. So look, I'm only half joking. This isn't anything particularly new, and I'm not surprised that Tesla would want to control what their drivers are saying inside those vehicles about these kind of things, especially about safety, but the whole stuff about Elon Musk did make me laugh. If you're asked about him, you must say, he's awesome, he's inspiring and motivating, dear leader. Right, moving on then. Come on, take it seriously. Indiana is going to be testing magnetic cement. They've called it Magment, obviously. Obviously they have. Why do you want magnetized cement? Well, you want to do that because it can charge electric vehicles. The governor of Indiana has announced that the Indiana Department of Transportation and Purdue University are testing the viability of magnetized cement, or Magment, of course. The magnetized concrete, according to techexplore.com, will be used to charge EVs. Initiatives have been developed over the years, all of which are equally bonkers, as a way of charging vehicles when they're on the move. Because for some reason, people are obsessed with charging EVs or EV trucks when they're driving. We've seen this before with huge metal channels dug down the middle of the highway, and then you center your vehicle on it, the computer takes over, and then a little thing comes out the bottom of your truck or your car, and it will take some charge from this metal channel. Otherwise, there is a scheme in the northwest, I think, of England, I believe. The government have given millions of pounds of funding to install on a test piece of road wires and cables above, and on, you know, if you're driving an electric vehicle, this huge thing, you know, pantograph, comes up from the top of your car and charges while you're driving. All of them, like I say, are equally bonkers, and so is this one. The road will be tested with electric trucks they say will travel a short stretch of road. No technical details released yet about this magnetic cement. However, it is, they say, absolutely fine in terms of safety for pedestrians. It has 95% efficiency in terms of transferring power, which is about the same as plugging in a cable, but that is pretty much standard for the best wireless systems these days. And they say that it's safe from vandalism, and it doesn't cost any more to use than standard road building materials. Well, that is brilliant, but it's also absolutely unnecessary. But hey, somebody had some budget somewhere, and so they're trying it. I mean, look, we're talking about EVs. Yesterday on the podcast, an EV that will charge in less than 10 minutes. I can't wait to find out more about the GAC. Also, talking about even earlier today, like the new Hyundais and Kias, like charging it 20 minutes. Like, you need to stop. If you want to fill hundreds and hundreds of miles into an EV and then do some more driving, you need to stop and have a break. Honestly, plugging in is not the problem that you need to solve with EVs at the moment. My scientific and very intelligent friends looking to solve a problem which I believe doesn't exist. Right, coming up on the podcast very soon, we'll be talking about vehicle to grid. And is your car battery insured? Stick around, we'll talk about those soon. First, we will talk about converting classic cars to electric, a great way to keep them on the road. And I'm very sympathetic about keeping cars on the road in their original condition. I think if someone's got a 40, 50-year-old car or more, and they want to keep a piston engine inside it, why not? You can't, wallpaper over what happened. We should celebrate the machinery that we've built over the years, but we shouldn't be using them for our day-in, day-out life. But why not keep them on the road? We built them, and, you know, it's part of the engineering, and so we should do that. But if you do want to make your classic car electric, there's plenty of companies that will do that. And how about a 1971 Citroen DS? You'll know this vehicle when you see it. Insanely long bonnet. It just keeps going and going and going and going. The rear two wheels are on a more narrow track, and then they are mostly covered by bodywork. And it had the really funky hydraulic rear suspension. You'll know it when you see a picture of it. Well, there is a company in the UK called Electrogenic. They've taken the French Goddess, as it was called, the DS, and they're an Oxford-based company, and they've swapped out the 2-litre four-cylinder engine. They've put in a 90-kilowatt motor, a 48.5-kilowatt-hour battery, and it's a front-wheel drive vehicle. 224 kilometres of range, and the engineers there even wanted to try and maintain Citroën's landmark hydropneumatic suspension system, the self-levelling thing that was so famous for making the car ride so silky smooth. And so rather than using a noisy mechanical pump from 1971, they've created a silent electric pump which delivers a more sophisticated ride than the original. And I love stories like this as well. It's great to use EV power to keep those cars on the road. Next, we'll talk about EDF and Nissan launching a new commercial vehicle-to-grid service, and not a trial. Whenever we talk about vehicle-to-grid or vehicle-to-home, vehicle-to-X, you know, anything really, we always say, oh, it's a new trial with five vehicles. Brilliant. Been going on for years. Vehicle-to-grid has got so many possibilities, and now EDF, the French energy company, Électricité de France, and they have a subsidiary called Dreev, D-R-E-E-V. Yeah, odd name. But anyway, Dreev, it's a partnership with Nuvve, a specialist company in vehicle-to-grid. We've had one of their senior people on this podcast before. Mark came on, Mark Trahan, a couple of years ago now, maybe even more, to talk about vehicle-to-grid. Let's get him back on. I'm fascinated by V2G. And they've got a joint company together, and they are offering vehicle-to-grid along with Nissan to fleets in the UK. Not a trial. You can just sign up for it. If you have a fleet of Nissan Leafs or ENV200s, they're the vans, right? You can save a bunch of money every year and sell the electricity back to the grid when it's expensive, and recharge the vehicles when the grid is cheap overnight. EDF will install 11 kilowatt bidirectional chargers wherever your fleet vehicles charge up, and there's a smartphone application as well to define the driving energy requirements and even track them in real time. This is brilliant, and I'll pop a link to this story in the show notes if you'd like to read more. Your car is insured, but is it insured for the replacement of the battery? Now, I only say that because when we started to insure our EVs, I had to call around several places and eventually find an insurer that was EV smart and understood that if the battery gets damaged, it might not be a case of just replacing a module or doing a fix. It could mean a whole new battery. And to ensure that if the battery is damaged, the battery isn't completely covered. And we are now. The whole vehicle is, all our EVs are completely covered for anything. However, in Korea, there is the financial regulator. And today they said that their nation's insurance companies must start selling riders for electric vehicles, all to do with the batteries. And this is brilliant because a substantial number of insurance companies don't actually cover the entire cost of a replacement like-for-like battery. It's a big burden for consumers. If it gets damaged just partially, then sometimes the whole battery has to be replaced. It's slightly in it. And the old one is recycled, obviously, but it leaves customers out of pocket. In South Korea, they're actually saying, look, we're going to mandate this. The financial services saying if you sell insurance, you have to make sure that you sell riders to cover full battery replacement. Really, really, really good idea. An example of the insurance industry staying up to date in what's needed in the world of electric vehicles. And finally, if you are heading to the New York International Automobile Show this year, you will find a lot of EVs. You knew I was going with that. Charging solutions, consumer awareness programs as well, and even indoor test tracks. The New York Auto Show's Level 1 is called Electric Vehicle Test Fest. That's cool. It's got test tracks with 7 new EVs for you to try, the likes of Chevy, Ford, Kia, Nissan, Polestar. Who else? Porsche, Volvo are going to be there. And you can take those cars out and try them. In addition to that, there's an indoor e-mobility expo. And added to this year's event to provide consumers the opportunity to test a wide range of e-bikes and e-scooters as well. If you go into that, I'd love to know. Let me know. Drop me a line. And let me know what it's like. Thank you very much for listening today. Right, quick question of the week reminder. I'll read yours out on Sunday. With almost 3,000 superchargers globally and 25,000 stalls, Tesla have now announced they will open up their network to everybody. But there'll be an app and it'll be more expensive the slower your car charges as it fills up to persuade you to move on. And what do you think about this as a Tesla owner or as a non-Tesla owner? What do you think about that idea? Email me hello@evnewsdaily.com. As always, big thanks, huge thanks to everybody who supports this show on the platform Patreon, patreon.com/EV News Daily. Easy to find me, even easier. They look after the credit card stuff. It's all secure. And I get like 95% of what you support with. It's a crazy good deal for creators. Way better than things like YouTube memberships and all that kind of stuff. You get a much smaller cut on that. So Patreon is fantastic, and it's how we make this show. It pays the bills, pays the streaming, keeps the show on the air. Thank you to everyone. You haven't got to, but if you want to support on there, you're more than welcome to. Our premium partners are Phil Roberts of Electric Future, Brad Crosby, Porsche of The Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, NationalCarCharging.com and AlohaCharge.com, Derek Riley and his wonderful EV Review Island YouTube channel, Richard at RSEV.com, emobility.co.uk for buying and selling EVs and making great YouTube videos about them as well, and emobilitynorway.com. Have a good one. I'll see you tomorrow. And remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.